Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of Beyond Trans. My name is Andre, and I'll be your host today. As you know, our intention here on the Beyond Trans podcast is to uplift the transgender community and uplift humanity itself. So that's our intention. Thank you for listening. Know that as a listener, you are actively participating in assisting, so it's wonderful. Also, if you have any comments or questions, please email us beyondtrans@gmail.com without the E. So it's BYONDTRANS@gmail.com. Welcome to Beyond Trans. So on this episode today, we're going to be talking about taboo topics. So it's taboo topics. And I've brought a very special guest. His name is Buns, and I actually met him several months ago, and we're in a support group together. And he's actually moving away. Tell us your pronouns.
Oh, he, him, or they, them, doesn't matter. Okay. I'm pretty, like, I don't really care about pronouns as much as some people do.
Okay, that's great. So Buns is moving, and moving from the area, and it's funny, I was driving past, going to an appointment this morning, and I was driving past a graveyard, and I saw this this windmill on a gravestone, you know, one of those wind things that moves in the wind.
Like a pinwheel?
Yeah, pinwheel, thank you. And I thought just how transient life is, you know. It's like this thing is moving and it's on top of a gravestone. And I just what I haven't shared with Buns that I'm going to share with you now, Buns, mm-hmm. is that just how like amazing you are to me. And I really mean that from my heart. And that when I saw that, I thought of you because you're one of those people, you know, we all have people in our lives that come in. They're fierce, and then they go, you know, and it's like, you know, they're not going to stick around, and so you just really cherish them for a while, as long as they're here, and Buns is one of those people for me that, you know, so when you have people like that in your life, listeners, I just really encourage you to let them know, because life is always moving, so here we go. So you're cherished, and you will be missed.
Thank you, of course, I'll miss everyone here, and I know that I'm a very like definition of an air sign, very like relaxed and easy, like, you know, very like I just move on with whatever's going on. But, you know, even though I am leaving the area, that doesn't necessarily mean that you all are leaving my heart or my memories. You know, I'm still gonna stay in contact with everyone, be yeah. here. You still have my number to send me flower pictures too.
That's right. So just know that if you think of me, I'm probably thinking of you too or whatever. So, okay. So taboo topics. So here we go. Now, listeners, just so you know, the reason I picked Buns for this episode is he really is that. Like, he has no problem delving into taboo topics.
I am a taboo topic.
Okay. He has no problem going there. And not only that, but he makes you feel safe, and it can be fun and easy and all that. So we're going to talk about, like, all those awkward things that and air them out. Let's air them the heck out. So I think we ought to begin with, actually, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your life story. How did you come out? You know, what's important to you in life? Let's just begin there.
I'll take this from you. Thank you. I feel like I have a very unusual coming out story with, in regards of, like, the whole, like, being transgender and queer and whatnot, because I didn't have the, oh, I've known since I was born story. You know, like, when I was very young, my dad kept my hair short and I dressed like a guy, and my birth name and still my first name is a gender neutral name, and like being registered in school and whatnot, I would always, you know, be quote unquote misgendered by staff, they would always call me a boy. They'd always call me by he, him, because my name, even though it is gender neutral, it's more on the masculine side. And it would always upset my mom, but it never upset me. And so I feel that from a young age, I had that sort of impact on me from a social point of view. But then as I got older, I still never had an interest in anything that was overtly feminine, but I never also had any interest in anything that was overtly masculine. I was always more on the androgynous side with anything I've ever been interested in, if you want to get into like a societal viewpoint of what's feminine and masculine. Like, masculine side, I was never into like cars or mechanics or anything like that. Not to say that women can't be into that, but that's generally stuff that is, you know, more coded as masculine. But then I was also never into more feminine stuff like makeup and makeup's the only thing I can think of right now. Fashion, you know, stuff like that. But if you want to really link like gender to interest, I never really was there. I was more like, I did art, but I also did sports, and I liked, you know, rock and roll, but then I liked pop music. So I was always just very doing whatever I wanted to do, no matter what. And so when I...
Who are some of your greatest music influences?
Music influences?
Like, who inspires you to be you? Name a couple bands or artists.
Mean, personally, my two favorite artists are Beyonce and Frank Ocean. Okay. But I listen to a plethora of music, you know, jumping from, like, Boston to Ghost to classical arrangements to... I've listened to, like, a lot of, like, Russian pop music. And then I don't listen to like K-pop or J-pop or anything like that, but I have a lot of friends who do, so in return I listen to that. My mom's from France, so I listen to a lot of French music. And I just don't really have like one genre of music that I really stick to quite often. But I do always find myself going outside of my comfort zone and then always just kind of coming back to my comfort zone, which is really more based in like rap and hip-hop and blues. Mm-hmm. I think that's just because of the people I grew up around and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily say any big musician has influenced who I am as a person. I have always been very individualistic. I've always just kind of done my own thing. And celebrities and actors and actresses and artists and people like that have never really had like a huge influence on my everything. If I were to pick out one person, it would probably be Gerard Way, who is the singer of My Chemical Romance, because he is very like flamboyant. He's very like feminine. He's very like dramatic. He likes to make a big show out of things, and I like to do that too. So, okay. like you said, I like to be fierce, but not in the like gay term, like yes, fierce, honey, but just more like I'm in your face. Like you will know who I am by the end of the day.
Right.
And, but yeah, so I don't feel like I have a very typical like coming out story. You know, I never really questioned anything. I just kind of did what I wanted to do.
And when did you know, like, okay, wow, when did you get present to the language for what you felt yourself to be?
It was honestly meeting Jamie.
Who's Jamie in your life?
Jamie is a person that I met on accident, actually. And
we all know how that is. Accident, quote unquote.
But
divine intervention. Go on.
Yeah, divine intervention. But so he's a trans man, and he's very active in like the Orlando community scene for like transgender men. And he's very active online, too. A lot of people know him through his, like, cosplays and through his, like, leather working and through his activism through Twitter and whatnot. And I met him through a mutual friend who adored him on the internet. And he ended up actually living, like, 20 minutes away from me. And he put out an all call online for this, like, volunteer group. And my friend really wanted to be a part of it because they adored Jamie, so they wanted to go meet him. And I was like, okay, I'll give you a ride. I have no idea who this person is, whatever. I went over and Jamie and Jamie's partner ended up really loving me.
Oh, wow.
So they invited me into the group. Mm. And I was kind of like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I guess I'll show up because there's free food. And I was a broke college kid, so sure. Started showing up, and now Jamie's like one of the most important people in my life, along with his partner, of course.
Beautiful.
Along with his partner, Crow, whom I also adore. But Jamie was a person, and so was Crow. Crow was a huge influence on me understanding who I was in terms of, like, the gender binary and the non-binary aspects of gender, because Crow is non-binary, and then Jamie is a pretty binary, like, transmasculine person. Mm-hmm. And although I identified a lot with how Jamie felt on certain aspects, I didn't always identify with him, but Crow was really there to kind of help me through the more non-binary aspects of mm-hmm. how I felt and understanding, like, where I could and did fall mm-hmm. in aspects of, like, that.
Let me ask you something. As far as the, what if there's anything, is there that's taboo in the trans community, non-binary community, in the transmasculine, transfeminine relationships and that sort of thing? Is there anything taboo, like, that's really sticky and uncomfortable to talk about amongst ourselves? That we can really break up?
I mean, for me personally, a lot of, like, the pattern that I've seen is a lot of, like, transmasculine people don't know transfeminine people, or a lot of transfeminine people don't know transmasculine people. And I have, like, seen a lot of, like, I have seen a lot of, like, separation between the two communities, and in terms of, like, they kind of seem to want to fight each other sometimes on, like, who's more oppressed. And I personally don't understand that, because I guess it's just more of, I mean, you know me, I know a gajillion people, so But like I was telling you earlier, I had not met other transmasculine people besides Jamie before our support group, which started back in, what, February?
Mm-hmm.
But that was just due to my own, like, isolation of not wanting to meet new people. But not everybody, but most of the people who were within my friend group were trans feminine or were women and trans women. So I met a lot of, like, trans feminine people, and I've met a lot of, like, trans women, but then when it comes down to trans masculine, I feel sometimes I don't meet a lot of, like, trans masculine people. But with taboo topics, like what you were asking earlier, I really feel like a lot of more taboo topics obviously revolve around, not obviously, but
mm-hmm.
they revolve around sex and, like, anything that has to do with sex, whether it's masturbation or it's, like, monogamous partner sex or it's, you know, polyamorous or anything like that, like, sex and relation, I really feel is, like, more of a taboo topic.
Yeah, that's great. Buns was sharing with us earlier that his mother was born and raised in France, so, you know, there's more freedom there in his lineage to share and discuss and talk about, like, sex. Like, it's okay, you know? It's not this thing that you hide under the table. And I think that especially in the queer, trans, non-binary communities, it can be more hidden because of the social climate. And then I think as a result of that, there's more disease.
Yeah, for sure.
Sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah, because people aren't educated even about the basis of sex, so they're not even, like, it's not even to do with pregnancy as much as it is disease, like, starting to come back because people aren't taught about, you know, condoms, because it's more of abstinence teaching rather than let's act, like, in through abstinence and fear, like, fear-mongering rather than
mm-hmm.
teaching, like, the health aspects of STDs, because even when I did nursing classes in high school, as soon as we got onto the topic of sex or, like, birth or anything like that, my teacher, who was devoutly Catholic, super religious, as a nurse, which was wild, she's from Texas or something, I don't remember, but she would literally just skipped over the chapter. She was like, you guys don't need to learn this, because abstinence is the way to go. Don't have sex until you're married.
Mm-hmm.
But that always weirded me out, because A, my parents have always been very open about things. They've always been very, like, if you want to learn about something, just either ask us or you can ask the internet. Literally, like, but, you know, look at credible sources.
Yes.
Whereas even when I was in a school setting, I was taught, like, abstinence only, which was very weird because I went to, I grew up here, which is pretty, like, you know, we have a fairly large, like, queer community. We have a fairly large, I mean, we're in a big city, you know? It's not, like, we're not in the middle of, like, Bodunk, like, Midwest or anything like that.
Well, some of us are.
Well, yeah, some of us are. That's where I'm going. Except not really, but I'm going out near there.
You know, James Baldwin, the artist, said a great thing about that, though, and I just really want to point to that, is that he said something like, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, do you think that really the things and actions that happen in Mississippi where there's a great amount of oppression, that same social climate or that same consciousness, he said, do you really think it doesn't happen in Los Angeles or where movies are made? He said, no, it does happen. It just happens to be more under the table. Mm-hmm. It can't be any different. It's like we're all responsible for each other. And
oh, yeah, because even here, you know, like bringing up L.A., it's like, you know, we're in a pretty more populated city, and I still went through the entire, like, abstinence thing only, which you kind of only hear about as a myth from the middle of nowhere United States, but
right.
I grew up in a large city. I went to high school in a large city. My high school had 4,000 people in it. Like, it was larger than a town, like, and, or larger than a village, and I was still just, and then on the flip side, when I did take a health class, like, outside of that nursing with that weird teacher, like I was saying, it was fear-mongering, where they showed us really graphic pictures of people who had, like, not gone to the doctor and had not reported their STDs and stuff like that, so it got to a point where it was just basically uncurable, and it was like, if you have sex, this is what happens. And I'm like, I don't think that's what happens, but okay.
That's great. So let's for our listeners' sake, let's consider, like, somebody knows they're trans, they are very sexually active, and they want to learn more about safe practices, and they want to take care of themselves that way, you know, self-care. And so what are some resources or what are some suggestions that we can give them that, well, one thing that comes to mind is, you know, learning to be assertive, like to say, hey, you know, to have the courage to simply go to someone that you know is safe and say, hey, you know, I want to learn more about this, or, you know, to be willing to be vulnerable and ask questions. I think that's very key. What else do you feel is essential for destigmatizing taboo topics in the trans community?
Just honest, having an open, honest conversation with people who are around you, because I learned a lot about, you know, PrEP and PEP and HIV and things like that from a lot of trans women that I was friends with, because as a trans masculine person, I really feel like those things are overlooked for the trans masculine community, and they're very, like, honed in on the trans feminine community. So I learned way more about HIV and the history of HIV AIDS from trans feminine people than I ever learned from anything else. And that, obviously, it's not like, it's not really a party topic, you know, you don't want to go into a party and just be like, hey, hold my beer, let's talk about AIDS, like,
right.
You know, like, that's not really something you want to do. But sometimes it's just having open, honest conversations with people, even about your emotions, and mentioning, like, hey, these are things that I don't really know, do you know anything about this or something, like, yeah, I mean, that's basically what I had to do, and that's why I brought it up within our group, where when we were talking about merging the two, like, support groups of trans masculine and trans feminine people, when I mentioned, like, we should learn more about each other's medical transitions and then also emotional difficulties that we face,
that's beautiful.
Because that was something that I feel like a lot of, specifically for me, because I'm because I'm a trans guy, I've met a lot of trans feminine people who don't know anything about trans masculine people. They don't know anything about the medical transition. They don't understand anything about what I have gone through specifically on not only an emotional level, but also on a physical level. Like, they have no idea what testosterone does to your body if you are not, like, assigned male at birth. So it's very, like, that's where I was bringing up, where I was like, sometimes you just have to talk to people. You just have to ask them. Obviously, no invasive questions if they're not comfortable with it. But for the most part, I found that most people want to talk about this. It's just nobody ever approaches them about it. So they just kind of keep it to themselves, or keep it to their blogs, or keep it to Twitter, wherever they want that. Because it's a hard conversation to have in person. It's hard to look someone in the eye and say, let's have a conversation about this thing that we're taught from a very young age to not talk about.
That's right. And that's what we're here to say on this podcast today, Buns and I, is that it's not easy, but it's essential for health and for mental health and for well-being, and you're worth it. And so to have the courage to go there with someone that you trust. They may not have the answers, but something will open for you. You know, they may know somebody, that sort of thing. So, Buns, I'd like to ask you some candid questions, may I? Do I have permission?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if I'm not comfortable with anything, I'll just let you know and be like, let's go to the next question.
Okay, great. And, you know, what's comfortable for you might be uncomfortable for me, and vice versa. So let's just...
Exactly.
I know for me, the topic of masturbation, you know, stimulating our core is a way of saying it, or masturbation. How has that shifted for you in your shift in becoming who you are today? How is that for you? Is there anything taboo in there that's uncomfortable for you to talk about that you think is worth airing out?
Not really, because ever since I was pretty young, specifically my dad more so than my mom, but my dad's been pretty open about this thing, about masturbation, about this developing or happening from puberty. But I think
I just have to pause there and just how beautiful is that? Like, imagine a future where it's healthy and the parents talk about it and it's just like this open aired conversation. How healthy. Okay, go ahead.
But yeah, like I was saying, I think more of the issue that I had was before going out to testosterone, I never masturbated. Didn't feel the need to, didn't have a desire to. I had sex with some of the boyfriends that I had, but I wasn't ever super into it. Like, it wasn't something that I went out and actively, like, sought after, like many of the girls I knew. And I refer to myself as a girl pre transitioning, because that's what I'm comfortable doing. I know a lot of trans masculine people aren't, but for me personally, I'm comfortable saying that. Before transitioning, something that I was never interested in. Other girls were interested in it. I wasn't. It was always a weird topic for me to talk about, where girls would hang out with me and they'd be like, oh, who are you interested in? Who's the next boy you have? And I would never really have an answer, and I would just kind of dodge the question. And so for a really long time, people thought I was a lesbian growing up, because I would never talk about it with guys. But I would also never talk about it about women or girls either, because that wasn't what I was interested in or who I was interested in. Like, I had a very emotional relationship with my best friend in high school, and we were very, very close, basically like siblings. And people always thought that him and I were together because we had such a odd, deeply emotionally connected relationship. But it was never sexual. It was never physical. And it was never something that we pursued romantically, because neither one of us were romantically interested in each other. It was just more of, we were basically platonic soulmates. And I feel like for me, prior to transitioning, masturbation was never a thing that I would have even considered or looked at, because I just didn't feel the need to do it. And then post-transitioning, I was like, oh, okay, I understand what people mean when they say you're horny like a 12-year-old boy, because that's where I was. I was dying. And then it's just more of like, now it's just basically something that I just do, because it's like, well, I got to get on with my day. Like, let me just go and finish and then leave.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, I feel like that is a very much more of like a taboo topic, rather than talking about sex with someone else. It's just more of like pleasuring yourself.
Yes.
And I'm like...
Yes, I agree. And so I just wanted to touch base on that topic first, because I agree, it really is like a taboo topic. Some people might consider it selfish or, you know, whatever.
Which I always find, like, really weird, because I'm like, if you know how to please yourself, then why don't you just do it? Like, yeah. Self-care.
Right. Like, self-care is a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so... So, safe sex. What is taboo or uncomfortable for you in your relationship? You are in a monogamous relationship, is that so?
I'm not. Okay. I am in a polyamorous relationship, but it's not... I don't actively seek out other people, because I'm just tired. Like, I'm just, like, emotionally and just not sexually interested.
Okay. Well, I think it's great that you allow that for, you know, it's for some people it works, some people it's not for them. You have to feel that out for yourself, listeners. What is taboo in the world of sex for you? Like, what was, like, not too long ago in the world of sex, sexually transmitted diseases, where, you know, it wasn't okay to talk about or even acknowledge, whereas today now it's like you've broken down that for yourself and it's okay now?
Well, I really think that the biggest thing that, because like I mentioned earlier, my parents were very open about sex and they were open about things, but the one thing that they were never very open about was HIV and AIDS, because they just didn't, they lived through it, not as queer people and not as people who were friends with queer people who had HIV AIDS, but just they were existing during that time, during that like horrible time period. And I really feel like that was something that they never really taught me about or delved deeper in on. And they were more of like, oh, well, if you're growing up and you're straight, then you don't have to worry about it. But obviously I wasn't straight. I wasn't cis. And I just never really knew anything about it, and I feel like that was more of a taboo topic.
Uh-huh. So where the rubber meets the road for our listeners, like, if it's not a concern or a consideration for them, say right now, like, they just want to have sex and it's like, you know, whatever, what are your thoughts on having, allowing us all to broach that topic in a safe manner where it's no longer taboo?
I, like I mentioned earlier, I just think having open, honest conversations about these things is what's, like, the healthiest and the most...
With a therapist or friends or support groups, or what's worked for you and what hasn't?
For me, well, therapy has never worked for me, so I can't advise on that. I know therapy's worked for some people, but just for me personally, I've never found a therapist that I really jive with very well. But for me, it's always been, like, with friends and with reading a lot of things, like, online and stuff. But there's always misinformation, there's always things, like, so you have to learn from, you have to be able to not only learn from sources, but you have to be able to, like, critically analyze sources, because I've read a lot of, like, misinformation.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, I've read a lot of misinformation about sex or about consent or about safe sex, including, like, within the BDSM community, and it kind of makes me worry about people who find stuff on the internet, or I've met people who...
I agree.
Yeah, I've met people who...
Be discerning on the internet, everybody.
I've met people who their idea of a good time is definitely not my idea of a good time, and, you know, sometimes you just have to be able to say, like, I'm not cool with this isn't something that I want to do, like, and I think that...
So consensual...
Yeah, like 100%. Like,
yes,
that's all I advocate for, is if someone's not, like, enthusiastic and okay with what's happening, and if I sense any sort of discomfort, it's going to be a conversation. I don't care if the moment has to stop. So, and I think that that's really important to have in a relationship, too, is just open, honest communication. And I feel like that can become taboo, too, sometimes, is being honest about your feelings, because you may upset other people, or you might upset your partner, or you might, like, not meet your own ideal, like, expectation.
Yes.
But I think that's also something that we can kind of go in deeper on.
Yeah, I'd like to touch base on that. I know that in relationships, sometimes somebody in the relationship is extremely sexually active and really just desiring to go there. and the other partner may not want to go there at all. And it's just not there for them right there. And I know that that is, has been such a huge factor for relationships completing, for upset, for why doesn't he love me? Why doesn't she love me? I don't understand. I want, you know, to be with them so bad. How come they don't want to be with me so bad? Blah, blah, all that. And what we can get present to on that is that at different times in our lives, we're in different energetically parts of our expression or our physical body. So, for example, somebody might be, you know, at their root core stimulation level, at the root chakra level, and very much desiring to stimulate their core. And somebody else might be, you know, in their throat chakra or their Vishuddha chakra, and they're just not feeling it. They're feeling something else. And so if you are at that particular place where you're at the root chakra level and your partner isn't, that might help to alleviate and bring some understanding to, you know, it's not about you. It's about their life and their experience and their expression at that time. And so to have an understanding for them. And again, the consensual, okay, well, let's talk about it. You don't want to do this? Well, what if I did that? And, you know, being in constant communication, clear communication is everything. So yeah, like that. Another topic I'd like to talk about around that is our bodies, our physical bodies. A lot of us were raised in the social climate to be ashamed of how we look. Like this very moment, how do you look? How do you feel about yourself? How do you feel about your physical appearance? All right, take a moment to think about that. Right, what comes up for you? Oh, well, my hips are a little wide, or I could lose a little weight, or, you know, my feet are big, or I don't understand why, you know, my nose is so large, or why one eye is more closed than the other, you know, all these things. And so we're taught by the social climate or all of the advertising, etc., to have shame about anything less than perfection or anything less than who we are as our unique selves. And so, and that's the shame of our beauty. And so to take a moment now and just to acknowledge your own beauty just now as you are, the perfection that you are, and owning your beauty right now exactly how you are and letting go of any shame around your beauty. I know for me, a practice that assists me with that is to I started walking around my house naked. You know, I would close the blinds and just take off all my clothes and learn to be comfortable with my own body. You know, and it took a little something. Like one day I would, you know, take this off, my shirt, you know, next day I would take off, you know, my pants. And, you know, for some of us who have gender dysphoria, it can be very challenging. You know, there's different levels of gender dysphoria. And so just honoring where you're at in your process, and to have the courage to you could try that practice, you know, take off all your clothes and bit by bit, and just get used to being in your own beauty, in your own home, you know, or in your own space, and see how that feels for you. It really shifted a lot for me. Anything for you on that topic, Buns?
No, I mean, I think you pretty much summed up everything. I mean, if anybody knows me in real life, they know I'm practically a nudist. All my friends have, like, seen me naked at one point or another. And, but like you were mentioning before, you know, people who struggle with gender dysphoria or body dysmorphia or anything like that, it can be a harrowing experience to try and accomplish something like that. And just know that taking it one step at a time does not mean that you're weak or anything like that. Or, you know, sometimes it doesn't even necessarily have to be like, okay, today I'm going to I'm going to walk around without my shirt on. It can just be like your first acknowledgement of like, this is something that I struggle with. That already is a big step. Like,
it's a great point.
They say all the time, you know,
it's
just
a great point.
Admitting is always the first step. And,
yes.
You know, and, but on the flip side of that, not every transgender person has to have dysphoria or body dysmorphia in order to identify as transgender. And I think that that was also to, not to bring back my story, but like to go back on my coming out story.
Sure.
I feel like that was also a very difficult aspect of my coming out, was I never had any sort of like body dysphoria or anything like that. I didn't wake up every day with the classic like trans narrative of like, I hate my body every second of every day. Like I was just like, I loved my body. I still love it. And it was like, I was very active. I was on the swim team. I didn't do soccer. I was terrible at soccer, but I did volleyball. I did track. I did basketball. Like I did sports. Like I was a jock and I loved it. The more for me, like it was more of the social disconnect that I felt.
Yes.
Where I had a very difficult time getting along with girls, and I had a very difficult time trying to like fit in with girl groups, and I definitely made more friends with guys. And I, not to say that I didn't have any friends who were girls, because I definitely did, and I was very close with like one of them, and I basically like grew up with her, but it was much easier for me to get along with the guys. And guys would always make this comment of like, they would be like, oh, even though you're a girl, you're like one of the guys, which obviously now in hindsight, I'm like, well, under my like trans microscope, I see, but you know, that was another part of my coming out that was very difficult for me to understand, where I fell on the binary or on the non-binary, on the, any sort of like the spectrum of the gender spectrum. Like I just didn't feel any sort of disconnect with my physical being as much as I felt with my emotional and mental being. And that can also become very disconcerting with some trans people, is, which I feel is also another taboo topic, is is talking about the like not having gender dysphoria, not having like body dysphoria or dysmorphia or anything like that, where you know there are certain aspects of me that I wish weren't, like, you know, when I was younger growing up, I was more socialized to be confused about. Like, I have yellow, like, I have a yellow undertone, and if I tried doing makeup, I couldn't, because everything was, like, pink or blue based, and nothing looked good on my skin, which obviously now, as I'm older, I realize that's because that's what the makeup industry was like, but I didn't like that I had more of, like, a yellow undertone. I didn't like that I had hazel eyes. Like, you know, I wanted to be that, like, Aryan, like, beauty that I was socialized to want to be like, especially...
The shame of your beauty, right? Yeah,
especially coming from a European household, where it's more of, this was something that was never really talked about, but my mom would always say, like, oh, isn't this person so gorgeous? Isn't this person pretty? And it would always be, like, the same, like, white, blonde hair, blue eyes looking person. And, but then, of course, the people that I grew up around, I grew up in a large Vietnamese community. I grew up in a very large Black community. I grew up in a very, very large, like, Latinx community. I wasn't around too many white people outside of my family. So, for me, it was always like, I wish I had this, or I wish I had that, and blah, blah, blah. But it was never like, I hate my breasts, or I hate my vagina, or I hate, like, my hips. So, like...
I love that. That's so great. Yeah. I mean, to break up that taboo about how it should be because you are trans, right? That fixed notion of, oh, I'm hyper-masculine now, and I should ride a motorcycle and carry a wrench. And, you know, that's what I loved about our group was people were like, you know what? I love makeup and I like to do my brows and I'm trans. I'm trans masculine.
Exactly.
And I'm going to keep my breasts. Thank you. You know, it's like, yeah.
It's like, yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I definitely am more of that like handyman sort of person, even though I still am very feminine when you see me, and I still am like very gay and very much a bottom, like, but I'm still very much like, oh, you need your plumbing fixed? Like, don't worry, hon, I'm right on over it. I can fix this. Like, you know, that they used to always make fun of me, not like, not in a malicious way, but like at my job they would always talk about how even though I was, like, the gayest motherfucker they'd ever met, I was always there fixing everything. Like, whether it was the machines broke, the, like, the computers were down, the systems were down, like, something wasn't working. I was always the person that was fixing it. And they would always just joke about that. But then on the flip side, if I didn't want to do something, I'd be like, I'm not doing this, I'm gay.
Yeah. So. That's great. So, for the listeners, if there's any, if there are any taboo topics for you that we haven't covered today, you know, uncover them for yourself, because if they're taboo for you, they're taboo. And there's healthiness in bringing things to the table, bringing things to the surface rather than keeping them hidden. There can only be sickness, disease, and hiding when we consider something taboo.
I was going to say, if anybody thinks of a taboo topic and emails it in, we could always do like a part two, even if I'm not physically present, you know, technology.
Yes. So that email again is beyondtrans@gmail.com without the E. beyondtrans@gmail.com. And again, this is the Beyond Trans podcast. So we're going to start to wrap it up here. And Buns, what I'd like to do is ask you a couple questions, and then we'll close with a visualization together that I like to do.
Sure.
So you're standing at a bus stop, okay? And there's somebody next to you that you know them. You know them, and you know that they're trans. What do you want the people standing at the bus stop with you to most know about this person that they probably don't know?
I mean, I'm not thinking of like a specific person in general, but if I were to be at a bus stop like this, I would rather people not focus on the physical aspects, whether or not they can identify if this person is trans or whether or not they're passing, but more of just seeing them as a full, fleshed out 3D human being who has a life, has a personality, has interests, has things going on in their life, has a past, has a future. And I would rather somebody focus on the personality aspect of someone rather than maybe more so like what they see immediately in that one instant, because I feel like that's very much a thing that the trans community has to fight for all the time, is to just be seen as human and be seen as a person rather than just to be physically seen.
Yeah.
So.
Especially if you're not passing.
Yes. Yeah. Like you were saying, especially if you're not passing, like, that's not, I don't think that that's anyone's concern, you know? Right. This is someone at a bus stop. This is not someone who has to fight for their right to be alive every 5 seconds, you know? They're not there to be an encyclopedia for you.
Well said. And that's what Beyond Trans is. Beyond Trans. Beyond the beyond. Just people, human beings, living our lives just like everybody else. It's beautiful. Thank you. All right, so we're going to just do a little meditation together right now, a visualization. So, Buns and our listeners, if you'll just close your eyes. And this is a visceral experience. So, just close your eyes and get present to your body. And imagine being on the earth where there's no more such thing as coming out for anybody. Coming out is a no thing. Like, we all are just who we are. So just breathe that in. No such thing as coming out. What does that feel like in your body? Feel it. And your friends, imagine your friends sitting around you. What is it like? No such thing as coming out anymore on the planet for anybody. What are you talking about? What is it like? What does it feel like? What is your mindset? Okay, and then imagine the entire city. No such thing as coming out. The city that you live in. It's a no thing. Doesn't matter anymore. People are just living their lives, accepting. And then the state that you live in, coming out is a no thing. The country that you live in, coming out is a no thing. What does that feel like? And then the entire planet, coming out is a no thing anymore. And gender is a no thing anymore. What is that like? What does it feel like for you right now in this moment? Just breathe that in and anchor it in the here and now. What is the world like? What does it feel like? What do you desire to do? Who do you desire to be? What's important to you now? What do you love? And what's important to your heart? And just anchoring that here in the here and now. Bringing it from the future, anchoring it in the here and now. And as you're ready, gently opening your eyes, coming back to the here and now. How was that for you? Did you feel anything or experience anything? Or anything you'd like to share around that? Anything you'd like to share around that?
Very relaxing, you know, just imagining a world where there could be a sense of, like, euphoric relaxation about existing. It's very nice.
So when we get caught up in our day-to-day and we're at the cash register waiting to check out and we're in line and whatever, just imagine that. Bring that to your present moment. You can do that. Possible. Thank you, Buns, for joining us on today's Beyond Trans podcast.
Thank you for the invitation. I had a good time.
Good. Okay. And thank you, listeners, for listening. Just know that your listening is an act of participation and making a difference. And do feel free to email us and know that we love you and we appreciate you. Let's say we love you on 3, 1, 2, 3.
We love you.
And you are valid, and you are here for a reason, and you very, very much matter. Okay? And if you need support, get it. Get support. You're loved and appreciated. Thank you for listening. This is Beyond Trans.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.